Welcome into the Think Deeper podcast presented by Focus Press. I'm your co-host, Joe Wilkie, joined as always by Jack Wilkie and Will Hiram. And today, fellas, we are talking lectureships. It is the conference slash lectureship time of year. Then again, I suppose that's every time of year these days, where it seems that there's always one every weekend, every other weekend, something like that. Some sort of conference, whether that be a youth conference, you know, whatever it may be, we know that PTP is coming up. One of the biggest of the year, probably the biggest of the year would be my guess. And
in the Churches of Christ.
In the Churches of Christ.
Inside of it, but yeah, inside of that is the main event.
Yeah, polishing the pulpit is pretty big. And so I think it would be good for us to just examine this, the good, some of the bad, and just ask some questions surrounding lectureships, surrounding the, you know, this rise of conferences, because yes, we are in the Church of Christ. Yes, we're specifically speaking of those. This is not just a Church of Christ issue. This is something that has really risen like just in American culture, where we are throwing more of these things than ever before, it seems. All of these conferences where we're getting, and I get these ads on Facebook of like 15 different speakers coming to some conference, and it's like a men's conference or it's a leadership conference, and they get everybody and their dog out there. And it feels like we are in the age of conferences where it is a who's who, get as many of the big speakers as possible. And I'm not sure that that's necessarily a good thing. And so there is some good to it. I think there's some negative to it as well. We want to open that up. So fellas, any introductory thoughts as we look to get into this episode?
I would just say, I mean, we've done episodes like this before in the sense of taking something that's pretty, call it central in the Church of Christ, whether it be, you know, youth groups or even worship practices, like, you know, things like that, and just ask questions is really what we're doing. Again, Thinking Deeper is the name of the, or Think Deeper is the name of the podcast. That's what we're trying to do. And so I don't want anybody to listen to this and go, you know, oh man, what are they going to say? They're going to be super anti-lectureship or even super pro-lectureship. Like, I think we all probably lean a certain direction on this, but really the goal is to maybe discuss things surrounding it and ask questions that, you know, maybe people haven't, maybe people have asked, but we're going to explore it on the podcast because we like talking about this kind of stuff and we find it interesting. And I think a lot of people in the Church of Christ probably would as well. The thing I'll say briefly and then hand it to Jack is just, it does, the one thing I'll say as we start is it does feel like there's like the market is a bit oversaturated, you might say, when it comes to, you know, lectureships and like, you know, there's always products like that. And, you know, it felt like everybody there for a while was doing chicken and waffles at their restaurants and like random places it would show up. Like, okay, I think the market's a little oversaturated for that. It kind of died back down. We are in the peak, the it seems like the hype, the biggest moment when it comes to lectureships. Like you said, youth lectureships, men's lectureships, women's lectureships, overall church lectureships, church workshops, and you know, you could go on and on and on and on. When I was the youth evangelist in Decatur, Alabama, just for our congregation, there were probably like 7 or 8 on the calendar, not all held at our congregation, but like it was on our members' calendar, like, hey, attend this one. We got this one that we're hosting, this one, other one's hosting. So yeah, there's a lot of them. So I do think it's worth our time to discuss, I guess would be my introductory thoughts.
Yeah, what I'd add is it's going to hit different people different ways. There's the attendees, there's the people who put them on, the people who speak at them. Like, there's just hopefully thoughts in there for everybody on this, on if you're going, here's some things to, you know, maximize your effort if you're planning them, or if you're somebody who thinks like maybe this is something you'd like to do down in the future, maybe some thoughts to consider. So just kind of, yeah, a little bit of something of all the different angles of this is I think what we're going to hope to get to here.
Yeah. So we want to jump into it. And yeah, I guess we'll start with the good, start with the things that I think are genuinely positives concerning the lectureship culture. Now, and the first, as we jump into it, is just fellowship. This is something that you hear a lot of, which is you get to see some of your favorite people, you know, this one or two times a year whenever you get together with them. And I think the fellowship genuinely is good. It is something probably most mentioned from everybody coming back. We have several of our church members that go to PTP. I've got a bazillion of one friends that go to PTP. That's always what's mentioned. It's just the fellowship of being near like-minded Christians, people that you haven't gotten to see all year round, and just knowing that there are people all over the nation, all over the world, really, but all over the nation that, hey, we believe the same thing. And it's just a good reminder that, yes, there are Christians all over the place that we can still gather together and worship together. And so I think the fellowship is a genuinely good part of the lectureship.
Didn't you guys both meet your spouses through lectureship type events? Technically, Joe, didn't you meet Alyssa at Tahoe Mission Family trip, Encampment?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're right. I met her at what is it called?
Was it not Tahoe? Faith Builders. Yeah. Okay.
Up in Seattle.
Jack, I thought I remembered you. Yeah. Legacy Family. So, yeah, I think this is a great, great one to start with just because I do think that's one of the really cool things. Obviously, I think there's a ton of value in really pouring into your local congregation and making the bulk of your spiritual, call it work, I suppose, going to that congregation. But there is something special about getting to meet people from other places and maybe establishing connections with people from other places. I know we traveled a lot when I was young. You know, my dad speaking at different conferences, and you know, that's not for everybody, but that was something, you know, very, very cool that I remember is, you know, making friends that lived 6 or 7 states away and you know, being able to reconvene. And, you know, I know that's because the other thing about it too is typically, not always, but typically you're going to, you know, be around at, you know, at people that go to lectureships like that are going to be more conservative for the most part. And so, you know, if you were somebody who didn't, you know, was from maybe up north or somewhere that's just not all that conservative, your kids probably did not have a lot of people their age who were kind of like-minded. And so that is one of the blessings, I think, one of the good things of lectureships like that is you do get to kind of be immersed in a little bit more, again, conservatism when it comes to, you know, conservative culture, conservative church beliefs and stuff like that. So yeah, the fellowship, I think, is a good one to start with. I think it's a pretty, pretty good positive.
Even within that, people who have churches that have a decent amount of people and even young people, they might not be like-minded. It's when you go to a place where it's kind of like, you know why everyone's there. They are spiritually interested people. They're not Sunday box checking people. They're people that obviously the different conferences kind of have their own doctrinal stripe. And so you're in alignment with people there in that way, which you might not be in your home congregation. And so I think that it's very much a filtering effect, you know, of kind of getting down to people that you start on a good footing with. And I think we'll get to this later on of like, it'd be really good to develop that more locally. But right now in this wild west world of what religion has become, it's very cool to have people that you can walk in the door, never met them. You see their name tag, shake their hand and know that you've got like A, B, C, D, E, F, G in common, and you can just kind of bypass those like introductory, yeah, do these people even share my values kind of thing. That's valuable.
And there is something about they took their vacation, you know, their summer vacation to be here to worship with saints and to learn at the feet of some learned men and to fellowship with other people. Like, as you talked about, that's already a good starting ground. Like, yeah, they are paying money to be here. This is not the low bar, like, my grandfather's always gone to this church, so I got up, you know, whatever it may be. Like, no, you are actively taking time and spending money to be here, showing that it is a higher priority. So yes, the upper, I'm not saying it's all upper echelon per se, and that sounds horrible to the, you know, to the church at home, but like the church at home, you're going to get some people that just aren't all that plugged in. People there go to be plugged in. And I think that's a key, yep, piece to this, but that also goes to the education point, which is second. Yes, a lot of these do provide a fair amount of education for people. And I think it's a, you know, the way that you get some really good speakers that handle a text in a way that you've never heard before. That's valuable. You go in there and there's some guy that's a Greek scholar and he's pulling out his Greek Bible and explaining things. You go, whoa, you know, my guy back home is not going to do that. We're going to get to the negative a little bit of that in a bit, but there is a positive element of being able to go and sit at the feet of guys that have been studying the Bible for longer than you've been alive. In some cases, twice as long as you've been alive. They have a lot of wisdom to share, and there is a high level of education at a lot of these.
This is where, so as I was kind of thinking about this episode, I kind of mentally broke it down to like 5 different kind of styles of conferences, or call it kind of purposes for the conferences, and we can maybe get into later, like, are some more valuable than others? I think they are, but that is one of the ones I came up with is like, you know, how do people, you know, what are we educating on? Well, spiritual and textual knowledge growth, I think, is really, really important, you know? And so, you know, you get lectureships like that, and obviously Polishing the Pulpit coming up soon. I think from what I understand, they try to do like everything, like all these that I'm about to go over, they pretty much try to do. But yeah, to your point, Joe, like getting to just learn a ton of Bible and be somewhere, you know, for a whole week where you're just you know, soaking in more Bible than probably you have combined over the last month, I think is really cool. But yeah, so you have, you know, education in that sense. I think there are conferences that are almost kind of primarily for ministers that work with them on like how to build sermons, how to study the Bible, that kind of thing. That's important. You've got, you know, again, with PTP kind of doing all this stuff, topical and cultural stuff, like how do Christians deal with mental health? How do Christian, you know, what should we do about social media, pornography? Like that's a little bit different than just the let's break down, you know, 1 Timothy 1, you know, type of conference. And then I think this, honestly, this next one is what most of them, most Christians really love. And that is the daily practical, like Christian content. How do I handle this issue in my marriage, parenting, you know, dating, like, relationship type stuff, just practical Christian stuff that obviously you can do textually, like let's break down this text, but the more practical, I think kind of the stuff that my dad does is kind of where my mind goes with this, of like practical type. And then the final one is just kind of like pep rally type of conferences, like getting people motivated, kind of amped up, rallying cry type, go out there and evangelize type of stuff. And again, maybe later we can get into like, are all of those worth it? Are some of those more important than others? I think I would say that they are. But yeah, so I say all that to say, my little you know, tangent there is that the education from it, I do think, is a really good positive.
Jack? Yeah. Yeah, and like you say, things are not going to get elsewhere. Now, in the digital age, that has shrunken a little bit. And so this is why I don't want to get into the cons side of this list just yet, because I think there is good education, but I think this is the one that deserves the most re-examination of what it's bringing to the table. But as part of that, and I've got this on the outline as well, it's a good chance to hash out doctrinal stances, and this is one that goes back a long ways. And I appreciate Mike and Jake Hysaw do this, a couple of guys out of the Dallas area. On their channel, they dig up, and I don't know how they get a hold of it. Like they're archivists. They have really good stuff, and they'll post, you know, the 1972 Fried Hardeman lectures where they debated, you know, something, something. And it's really cool to have, and who the different sides were and the cases made. And you can kind of see after those conferences, like the sides that people took that still kind of exist to this day, like those things are valuable. And so whether it's the more academic kind of college lectureships or the conferences. And you mentioned earlier, Joe, that this is not just a thing in the Churches of Christ. You see this happening with the Baptists, the Presbyterians too. They'll put on a conference and you can just tell by the speaker lineup what kind of conference it is. And it's like, these kind of people flock to this one and these kind of people flock to this one. And so with that, like, hey, this is our doctrinal stand. This is what we here are in agreement on. And I think that's important. I think that's something I give the denominations credit for. They're doing a better job of that than us, in that in the Churches of Christ, we get stuck on Church of Christ pet issues a lot, whereas really hashing out a positive vision for, like, this is what your family should look like, and this is, you know, debating some of the things that we think are important to talk about here on Think Deeper, those usually are shied away from. And I think that's something we could do a better job of like really carving out a, hey, at this lectureship, we promote this vision, this reading of the text, this application, you know, that kind of thing.
But I also struggle in the fact that it's tough to hash out things when you don't have any dissenting opinion. And I know this is kind of jumping to the cons, but this is a big part of where we go wrong. Like,
and see, I think there's a side for debates. And I think there's also a time for, we believe this. You know, this is our side of things and we're going to teach it this way. And some people, as I said, you kind of put the posters out of who's there and maybe what the topics are.
I can see that.
People are going to be like, yeah, that's not for me. But it's good to rally people around a shared belief in that sense.
I get that. I also do think, though, that you lose a little bit of, we're going to get into the cons here, I suppose. You lose something.
Get to the last
yeah, we'll get to the last one. And then we just take a blowtorch. No, just kidding. The last one is, and Will, you spoke to this, but like the different types, which is, it can be motivating and exciting. Not every one of them is intended to be that. Some of them are intended to be, you know, more on the high-minded type thing. But at the end of the day, there is a motivation level, an excitement level that a lot of times comes out of this, where you just come back, you're recharged. You know, maybe you were feeling a little bit low spiritually. You go around 7,000 Christians and hearing some things that, you know, wall to wall Bible for a week, that's a really cool experience for a lot of people. And so it has the same experience is like a summer camp for kids. I would say it is, like, kids have summer camps and the parents and the adults have lectureships and such, where you just get a little recharge. You get that excitement and everything else. A bit of a boost in the middle of the year, just to remind yourself, like, man, this is what's great about being a Christian, when sometimes you can be in the trenches otherwise. And so, yes, the motivation / excitement, I do think, is a pro. With each of these, yes, there are corresponding cons, I would say. But on the other hand, I don't think you could take that away from them, in the fact that there is a level of excitement that shows up with most of these lectureships.
So let's get to the other side of the equation. I'm not going to call it the bad.
We need cross-examination. I mean, there's some cons.
There's pros and cons, but I mean, cross-examination, whatever you want to call it. I think the main thing we want to get at is what this is doing to and for the local church. And sometimes the people coming back energized into the local church is great. People coming back more educated into the local church is great. All those things we talked about. On the other hand, something like the fellowship we talked about is such a strength. Yeah, but maybe if we're so looking forward to that, maybe we're not invested enough in the local church's fellowship, where they're not as like-minded and we have to work a little harder at it and things like that. And so I want to look at these things through that kind of lens of how the local church can benefit more if we kind of rethink some of these things.
Just briefly, Jack, before you get into that, the evidence for that, and this is kind of a, not a debate, but like a disagreement, the local church is dying.
Yeah.
Lectureships are not. Lectureships are thriving, you might say. I'm sure that's a name of a conference somewhere. But the local church is dying, and people will, and you'll go to these lectureships and the kind of prominent presences at those conferences will kind of make, to just be frank about it, false statements about how much stronger the church is getting and how they're growing. It's like, yeah, I'm sure you probably think that when you're surrounded by 7,000 Christians who all, to Joe, as Joe said earlier, took a week off to be there. Like, that's great. The local church in many places is not doing that well at all. And so that's kind of the heart behind a lot of what we want to get at here is, man, let's take some of that vigor and energy that maybe comes from it or goes into some of these lectureships and, man, pour it into the local church. Because hopefully we can all agree, when it comes to kind of the importance of the kingdom, which of those is more important? It has to be the local church. Like, even the most diehard lectureship fans would have to admit, like, you had to take one or the other. You got to go to the local church there. So I didn't mean to cut in there, Jack, but like, that is kind of a point of contention for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's not, you know, there's always that somebody will chime in and say correlation does not always equal causation or does not mean causation. That's true. But I don't necessarily think it's a coincidence that we're getting more and more and more conferences at a time when religion is going backwards. Like, yeah, it's almost what we're doing in lieu of the real grassroots work is, you know, kind of a, we'll go give one good, really good weekend a year, or, you know, a couple of them here or there, whatever the case may be. And so with that, the some of the things that are negative and might take away from the local church is there's a doctrinal clique culture where you're kind of supposed to be aligned with a conference or with the kind of people who go to a conference. And sometimes your preacher has to be aligned with, and this is some inside baseball stuff. We're not going to tell stories from behind the scenes, but kind of the pressures that are on people of, you know, you're in this circle of churches, the type of church that goes to X conference over Y conference, X lectureship over Y lectureship. And you know, other churches and other preachers and people like that go to those, and you're expected to kind of be in line. And there's kind of a, you know, we talked about the good side of this, which is the conferences can bring people together under doctrinal alignment, but it also can command conformity. It can command, hey, you know, if you're not going to be one of us on this, you're out the door. And that's hard. I mean, you're choosing between, you know, it can almost be, I don't want to say it can become a mini, like, denominational clique, but like almost a mini. Denominations have like their synods and their conferences and their, and not like gathering conferences, but like their organizational conferences, yep, of groups of churches that are associated. And you almost end up with that sometimes if you're not careful.
As you said, I don't, you know, we're not going to tell too many stories, but I do know of lectureships that uninvited guys, because you spoke on a lectureship with somebody else that we didn't agree with, spoke on the lectureship. There's 30 speakers. But that guy was there. We don't agree with him. You spoke at the same conference there. We don't want you speaking on ours, because if you fellowship that guy. And so what we do is we take a lot of these doctrinal issues, and unfortunately, we do start drawing lines of fellowship over some of these things. And I think all the people that go there aren't necessarily sure what they're buying into to some degree. Yeah. I know that they're, man, that's my favorite speaker. What they don't know is the guys that were disinvited that for some fringe take, again, new heavens, new earth, whatever it may be, I would consider a fairly like tertiary principle here. They're getting disinvited and in that uninviting, what that seems to indicate is like, am I just uninvited from this lectureship, or are you telling me that I'm like my soul is in jeopardy? That's a really tough line to walk with some of these things. And so, yes, with the doctrinal cliques, when you fail to platform that guy, is it just because I don't really like some of the things you're saying, or is it because I genuinely think you're a false teacher who's going to hell? That's a tough thing that I don't think lectureships really want to wade into, but that's kind of the brass tacks. Like, you get it down to brass tacks, you have to be able to say, do you think the guy is still right, doctrinally correct? And I get you don't have to platform anybody, you know, like you get to choose who you want, especially if it's your lectureship. I don't think you should be, it's compulsory type of thing for you to platform certain people. On the other hand, I think that's to me where the cliques really come in and where the gray areas come in is we will shun the guy to some degree, but we're not really at the point of saying that he's a complete false teacher or he's going to hell, but he certainly is not allowed to speak on the lectureship. And we just blur those lines. I do think that's very detrimental to the people attending. I think it's very detrimental to the local church.
Well, the local church part is like, are we autonomous or not? And that's what you start to lose sometimes if we go this direction.
Well, and what this leads to, and then briefly I'll get into the next point, but what this leads to too is the conservatism competition, essentially. Yeah, you know, how conservative, you're this conservative, well, I'm going to take another step that direction so I can be more conservative than you, and kind of in a weird way like a, you know, high school popularity contest almost about who can be more conservative. But that gets us into
I'll just say briefly that goes the other direction too, the progressives.
Oh, absolutely.
Have their ratchet as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So that gets us into though the next section of kind of the, again, whatever you want to call it, cross-examination, and that is kind of the idea of guys using the lectureship culture or the lectureship conference type of thing as a bit of a career ladder. There's the, just to be frank, celebrity culture that surrounds these conferences and lectureships. I mean, you'll see people parading around, taking selfies with as many popular and more well-known preachers as they possibly can. And obviously, as I'm sure one of you guys were going to speak to, the way that social media looks and all this, like, to be honest, for me, it's pretty uncomfortable to see a lot of that just because of the seeming deification of some of these guys. But you'll see, it's almost like, you know, this is a young preacher thing that, you know, it's kind of a badge of honor that you were invited to speak at, say, X conference. And then the next year you get invited to Y conference. And then after that, it's Z. And it's like you're working your way up in a way. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, getting to know people and I guess somewhat networking, you know, I don't have a huge, I don't, you know, think is all bad, but like, I don't know. The celebrity culture, I think of these two is the one that really makes, it kind of bothers me a whole lot more just because, listen, this is not the NFL combine here. Like this is not, we're not in Hollywood out here taking selfies with every star actor and actress we can find. And yet that's the feel that it gives a lot of times. 1 Corinthians 1 verse 12, Jack has on the outline about, you know, Paul kind of chastising the Corinthians for claiming to follow a certain person who baptized them, you know, Apollo and Cephas and Peter and Paul. And Paul says, hey, I didn't baptize you except for Crispus and Gaius for this very purpose. Like, that's not the point here. And so, guys, what thoughts do y'all have on this one? I think this is a pretty significant thing to bring up here.
Hey, folks, I want to tell you guys about this week's book from our sponsor, Cobb Publishing, Catholicism Against Itself. Catholicism Against Itself uses only books officially endorsed by the Catholic Church to show what Catholic historians admit about the history of their church, their hierarchy, their practices, and their claims. This isn't someone outside of the Catholic Church making arguments against the legitimacy of it. These are the Catholic experts and historians, all of them stamped with the official seal of approval and endorsement of the Catholic Church itself. They admit the Catholic Church forged documents in order to convince the laity to go along with whatever the hierarchy wanted to do, and that some of their practices to this very day are based on those forgeries. O.C. Lambert once possessed the largest library of Catholic books and documents in the United States outside of a monastery. After producing 2 volumes of Catholicism Against Itself, he challenged any representative of the Catholic Church to a public debate. No one dared. Available at CobbPublishing.com, CobbPublishing.com, Amazon, and many other online bookstores.
I very much agree. I think part of this is normal. Part of this of finding a guy that you just happen to really, really like. You enjoy listening to him. You found him on YouTube, whatever it is. There's some people that are great. You know, Daniel Mayfield, fantastic. You know, his preaching is really, really solid. I like listening to him. And if I was at the conference, yeah, you know, I might enjoy going up and talking to Daniel and you know, whatever conference that may be and just shooting the breeze with him. I think it'd be a little weird for me to take selfies and post on Facebook and post quotes. And this is a jerk thing to say. Can we please also stop with the quotes that are like, Jesus died for you. Oh, brother, you know, that's just it. Like, okay, let's wait for like some hot take. I'm not saying that that's not good to post. That's great. But like, you know, so-and-so brother said this. And it's like, that literally is, he's just quoting scripture and you're attributing it to him, or he's literally saying the most basic thing. And we got to be quick to post our little, you know, well, brother so-and-so said this, like, okay, but that leads to that celebrity culture. And I do think that for preachers, you got to realize, you know, 51 weeks of the year or whatever, unless you're speaking a ton, 51 weeks of the year, they're just the preacher. And a lot of times they're the butt of the joke and they're not always treated super well. And, you know, they're scratching by and things like that. And this is the week where they get to go. And especially if they're speaking, they get to be a part of something that's bigger than them. They get to be a part of something that is lively, and they get to be included with some guys that have been preaching for twice as long as they've been alive. And I mean, there is a level of this that is normal. That is like, wow, that's really cool. I think we can just, you know, it crosses the line when we are, kind of celebritizing some of these people. And the other thing for the career ladder is I'm all for a guy getting invited to these lectureships and everything. But yes, it does seem like the next thing to get bigger and better is you got to get invited to the next one, the next one, the next one. And you really want to show up well and shake all the right hands and get the right selfies with XYZ, and then you'll be able to go on to the next one. I mean, I'm not trying to be super cynical here, but yes, there is that level of like, I think for preachers, this is kind of getting to play from single A to double A to triple A to the pros to the bigs. You know, when you get to speak on the lectureships of the other ones, that's a big deal. Now, Will, people might listen to this and go, well, what about your dad? Right. You know, Brad Harab is your dad. Your dad's very well known. Your dad has experienced some of this. I know you've seen some of this where,
and
there's, you know, there's that time. I'm saying it is natural for people to have a favorite speaker and to come up and to shake some hands. I think that's normal. But even people posting selfies with your dad, yeah, I'd say the same thing. You know what I mean? It's just a moment of reflection is all I would say. I'm not condemning anybody for it. Just, are we making too big a celebrities out of some of this? And in some cases, yes.
Well, I don't want to speak for dad, you know, but he's even said before, like back because he hasn't been to PTP in years or a lot of the other, that's the one we keep using. I apologize just because it's fresh on our mind. But like, you know, he even said like, yeah, there is an element to, you got all these people that want to come and talk to you. Like no matter how humble you try to remain, it can get to you like as naturally as you would expect. Just like a 17-year-old kid is really good at a sport, man. You got everybody telling him he's good at it. What's he going to think, you know? And so I wanted to relate that, just like we want to relate all these points to kind of the way it impacts the local church. And Joe, you spoke to some of this already, but like what it can lead to, and then Jack, I'll hand it to you, is you go to a conference, you go to something, you get to hear maybe, you know, 10, 11, 12 really great speakers, kind of the big names, you hear a couple, and then you go home and it's like, oh, I got to listen to my regular preacher this Sunday. Oh, here we go again with this guy. And kind of, even if it's subconsciously, you can really just devalue your preacher and, you know, kind of look at him with disdain because he's not one of the big names, you know, if you go to a lot smaller of a congregation or something like that. And so I think that more than anything is what I would warn people to be cautious of. Like, the last thing your preacher needs is for you to come up to him after a week at one of these conferences and go, man, it sure was heaven on earth getting to listen to this other speaker that's not you, and now I got to come back and listen to you. Like, again, most people probably aren't that rude about it, but, you know, I do think that is an element that needs to be brought up here is, hey, we've had our gripes with preachers before, just like, you know, and we've kind of cross-examined preaching and all that before. Like, obviously, these are things we discuss and talk about, but at the same time, preachers work really hard, and the ones that don't get invited to the conferences, you know, they don't deserve to feel like they are, you know, this big because they didn't get invited to PTP or to, you know, Connect conference or to whatever it is. So Jack, what thoughts do you have on this one?
That's a really important point. You know, like the guy on stage, boy, he might be a great orator. He hasn't had you over into his house. He hasn't come over to your house for a visit. He hasn't, you know, been there in the hospital with, you know, with a little old lady at church. He hasn't, and I'm not saying they don't do that. I'm saying they do that in their own place, but like appreciate the guy that God has put in your town and what he brings. And that's the hard part about this thing. You know, like the idea of a platform of a podcast like this is a platform of having, you know, I write on online and things like that. And some of the coolest people, some of the like best people I know and are people that I've met through this. People who reach out and say, hey, I really appreciate your work, you know, or I really enjoyed that article or whatever it may be. And I really appreciate that. There is a difference, and it's very weird to me when like it's the selfie thing, or like when there's, you know, the few times where I kind of have had, oh, I'm talking to you. Like, no, it's just me. I swear. It's, you do not need to be impressed by this. Like, this is, you know, but like you said, Will, it can get to your head when somebody comes up and like, oh, it's you. Like, and not that I have that happen a lot, but like where it does, you know, that's not, you're not going to have that with your local preacher. Your local preacher is like, man, that's a good guy that's just there. He's reliable. He's there. And so I think that can be fostered. There's one other angle of this we haven't discussed on the latter kind of celebrity culture thing. One of the best ways to get yourself in that rat race is by hosting a conference. You host your own, you invite people, they invite you to theirs. That I think is one of the reasons why this perpetuates, why there are so many of them, is it's just kind of, you know, okay, now you're one of the schedulers and planners, and you're a name that's known. You had people into yours, and maybe you get on the next one. And I'm not saying somebody goes, I'm going to have a conference, I'm going to spend all the local church's money so I can get an invite to such and such lectureship. Nobody's that cynical, but it's just one of those, like, right. This is what starts to happen. It's like, well, we should have a conference here. Why? How is that going to help the local church to have guys come in and preach to them for a weekend? Are there better ways to allocate those resources? I mean, you look at the budget of like flying in a bunch of guys, hoteling a bunch of guys, rental cars for a bunch of guys, setting up, you know, the design and all that stuff. Like, and a lot of these are put on for free, you know, like locally. And so I don't know that it is the best thing for the local church. Luke Taylor had a really good article on this on To Be Like Christ a couple of years ago. He got a lot of flack for it. It was called
Consider, it's very well written.
Yeah, it's called Consider Skipping the Next Christian Conference. Here's why. And that was one of his points, is like investing in the local work might be a better use of your time and money. And, you know, and so to that point Will made earlier, like we have more and more conferences, that's not making the church stronger and stronger. And so that's something to consider as well on that, you know, celebrity culture side of it, of like, just having one and being around those guys, that's not necessarily helpful. And the resources we're setting into it. Another point that I think goes along with Will's idea of, you know, kind of making you look down on your local minister, looking down on the fellowship of the local church and of the experience, the worship experience. No, nothing is going to match 1,000 people singing Our God, He is Alive together. Right. Your local church of 70 people can't do that. And it's not really fair to compare it to it. But then, you know, people come back and, you know, that was just the greatest thing you'll ever hear. Okay, but now 51 weeks of the year, you don't get that. And you've got to live with that.
This is the spiritual high point that we've made before for church camps and stuff like that, that we, you know, I know Joe's probably anti-church camp. But like when it comes to, you know, we have, you know, said like, hey, you know, nothing necessarily wrong with church camp, but be very wary of that idea of the spiritual high, which is I'm going to be super spiritual this week, and then I'm going to go home and, you know, not pay attention and worship again and be on my phone in class and that kind of thing for young people specifically. I think that that's something that you have to be very mindful of here with the conference culture, is that spiritual high that you just get all recharged. And listen, that needs to fuel you into, to your point, Jack, really working hard in your congregation, not just returning to, yeah, I mean, there's going to be that concept of a spiritual high that you just have to be very, very, again, wary of, is I guess the best way that I would put that. Joe, what thoughts do you have?
Well, Jack, you have the thought in Church Reset, you do a really good job of laying it out, of everybody being consumeristic, right? Consumeristic Christianity. Is this not the ultimate consumerism Christianity, where you go, you get really good preaching, you get to sit back and listen to really good a cappella music, 1,000 people singing one song, and it feels great. And it's like, it is a, you know, high, it's almost like a dopamine rush that you get from things that you're already a consumer at home, and this is just 10 times better. Like, this is the really good candy. At home, it's kind of like we have, you know, you got like Smarties or whatever, but like this is like double chocolate Oreo XYZ, and you're going, whoa. But hold on, let's go back to the local church and realize we weren't intended to be consumers. You can go there and consume all of the content in the world, the end of the day, when you come home, we're intended to work. We're not just intended to wait for our preacher to wow our socks off with some amazing message. Like, our goal is to get to work, to encourage the preacher, to encourage more fellowship, to get out and evangelize, to be players in the game. And I don't think there are very few people in the lectureship game that are players in the game. Like, they are going to be entertained. They are going to consume. I'm not saying all of that's bad, but on the other hand, I think it is just church, like regular church, mega-sized, and it's really tough to go back down to it once you've tasted that. And you were kind of looking at it as the exact same thing. Like, it's completely different callings. One is more consumeristic. That is, the local church is not intended to be. The local church is, what can you bring? How can you help those in your church? And the potluck illustration Jack uses is perfect. This is, you know, going to the favorite restaurant in the world. Like, oh man, local mom and pop shop's not going to be near as good as getting to go to the best steak place in the world. Yeah, but you should be helping cook the steak. You should be helping make that restaurant the best it can be. So we have to do a little bit of thinking in our minds, like a little reframing, a little changing, to recognize that's great to be able to go and consume those things. That is not what you were called to do when you get back to your local church. You are called to engage.
I think a lot of people do go for the, all right, I'm going to go get spiritually supercharged and come bring that back to the local church. And when that happens, that's good.
Right.
I think sometimes it's, you go get that supercharged and you come home and you want to do something, and the people at the local church are like, yeah, you know, we're busy. Like, sure. And yeah, that can take it out.
That's discouraging.
It is discouraging. And I get that. And even with the preacher thing we talked about, you know, of like devaluing your local preacher, I think even a lot of the guys on the lectureship would tell you, if you heard them 52 weeks a year, it's not like they've got their keynote and lessons and things.
Their
like
home run sermon.
Yeah. Their home run. Yep. And it's a different even way of presenting. I mean, like, the whole thing is different. And so it's very similar to the church camp discussion, as you said, in that, like, if you're looking at this the right way, then it can be a very useful thing. If you're looking at it the wrong way, it can make your spiritual life worse. You know, where people go to church camp and, like you said, they get that spiritual high, and then the rest of the year is just not good enough. And so if you come at church camp with a view of like, man, this is just a really good time, and there's going to be some Bible involved, I'm going to just meet friends, have a great time, and all that, then you're not going to like have that withdrawal, that spiritual drop off. Well, the same thing with this. If it's like, man, this is a really good fellowship, maybe make some new friends that I can transfer from, you know, I can become Facebook friends with them, keep up with them, maybe meet up with them. I know some people have like found lifelong friends just from going to some of these lectureships. That's great. I think that's awesome. Use that, you know, in the that sense of like, go engage with it and then take something away for real life with it, and right, something to take back into your local church, and something like new or different thing you can do that, you know, adds to the work of the local church or whatever, if you're gonna be a part of these things, rather than, as you say, Joe, the consumer, and just going back going, oh, it was so great, you know, I experienced heaven, and, you know, can't wait till next year. Like, well, you're kind of telling your local church family they're not good enough.
Right.
Yeah. And tied to that, kind of the last thing that I put on here was, I really think that what we have, I'm sure, talked about in a couple of podcasts before, is the Titus 2 version of teaching, which very much reads as kind of personal mentorship, older men teaching younger men, older women teaching younger women. While it doesn't explicitly say that that's more one-on-one, that doesn't seem to be in the form of a class, you know, because you're teaching them how to love their husbands, how to take care of a house, how to be homemakers. And then for the young men, certain behaviors, and like, that's not really easily done through a class. And so to me, obviously, that is very much, because that's how Paul was to Timothy as well, is very, you know, kind of one-on-one mentoring type. I think that, as we've said before, the church needs so much more of that. And that is, I do think, one of the, call it, more negative sides of conference culture, is it's basically the total opposite of that. There's no one-on-one mentoring going on. It's very much a, you know, one in front of 500 people, you know, lectureship style, which, you know, might have its time and place. But this is where I think it can harm the local church, is it emphasizes and prioritizes the big group lectureship stuff. And I think we need more people used to, if they're older and have the wisdom to share, finding a young person, I'm not even talking about 15-year-old. I'm talking about a, you know, maybe 27-year-old married guy that an older man can, you know, go out to coffee with and share some wisdom. Or obviously the, you know, 47-year-old woman to the 31-year-old woman. Like, that's what I think the church needs more of. And that is pretty, again, just kind of a very distant thought when you're at the, you know, whatever conference that people find themselves at. And so again, you could argue there's a time and place for both. And I think that, you know, somebody might have a really good argument for it. But what I will say is right now we have once again, an oversaturation of one side and basically hardly anything when it comes to the one-on-one mentoring, which I think is what Titus 2 is all about. So I would slot that into kind of the negative column when it comes to the conference culture. Hey guys, Will Harab here. Just wanted to take a minute and let you know that if you enjoy listening to the Think Deeper podcast, we wanted to make you aware of another podcast we have on the Focus Press podcast platform. It's called the Godly Young Men podcast, where myself and Joe, we tackle a lot of cultural issues that are facing young men. The target age range is around 15 to 25 years old, but we have young men of all ages listen to it. Our goal is just to restore them to godly masculinity and talk about the challenges and things that are facing young men in today's time. So if you're interested, check that out on YouTube or on any of your favorite podcast platforms.
Yeah, so that actually brings up an interesting question as we kind of wrap up that you know, cross-examination section here. Is more preaching, this lectureship style you're talking about, this lecture style, this preaching to people, is that our biggest need in the church? Because what you just spoke to is a very interesting thing. Like, I think we overemphasize that. That's why we have so many of these lectureships starting and so many big name speakers these days. Is like growing up, and maybe this is me not paying attention, I don't know. It felt like there were a few. Everybody knew Tom Holland, you know, he's a big name, obviously, and you know, huge in the church. And like there are some big names. I feel like everybody is getting big these days. And I feel like all of this is in service of finding that next great speaker, very much like an American Idol mentality. Used to be local bands would you know, get big and that was a great thing. And then at some point we decided, let's celebritize this and let's make it an American Idol. And I feel like that's a big part of what we see in the church today, which is more and more and more American Idols. And I'm not trying to call people out. I'm not trying to say there are some fantastic men, some fantastic speakers, no doubt. But it does seem to promote this idea that preaching is our biggest need. That's the thing that's going to kind of save the church, is we're going to rise up these amazing speakers. I'm curious to get your guys' thoughts on that. Is more preaching, more of this lecture style, our greatest need in the church? Do you think this is a positive trajectory? And I mean, the cat's out the bag in some ways. Obviously, we don't think that this is a sign of a super healthy church. But on the other hand, to have better speakers, more well-spoken speakers who are able to communicate their messages effectively, I think is good. But is more preaching our greatest need?
I asked the question in Church Reset. What would do you, like, if you really were at a stuck point in your spiritual life, what would be better for you? A few hours across the table from an elder or a weekend full of listening to the best preachers you know? And I always get some people answering, well, both. Like, please participate in the hypothetical.
Exercise here.
It's a thought exercise asking you to rank these things is what I'm asking you to do. And I think everybody knows the ranking is somebody who knows you, a relationship closer is that other one. And the other thing that comes to mind is that quote about we're drowning in information, but starved for knowledge. Mm. And I think there's a million things you can put on podcasts like this all year. You can pull up the live stream from whatever church, listen to the sermons. Every single day, there's a point at which, and Luke Taylor, I brought him up earlier, had another great article on this, of what some people need is to stop listening, reading, consuming lessons, and go do something.
Go do it. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. My thought on this was, you know, okay, I don't think preaching is our biggest need. And so then the next question would be, what then is our biggest need? And if my answer is not what I spoke on a second ago, which is
right,
older men teaching younger men, older men teaching younger men, which I would say is probably top two. The other one that I think is the church's biggest need is Christian parents raising faithful kids. I think that's the church's by far biggest need. And you can say, well, the lectureships help teach them how to do that. Well, stats would say otherwise, honestly. Like, that's, it's not seem to be helping that much. And so again, the theme there is a lot smaller, closer to, you know, again, one-on-one, one-on-two, one-on-three, discipling. That's it was an evangelical buzzword there for a while, but I do think that is more of what the church needs is a Christian dad, a Christian mom, raising faithful kids, raising them up in the faith to have their own Christian family. Sure, can that be helped by conferences? I suppose. But I think that's more so helped by kind of a lot of the stuff that Jack was just talking about. And I don't know. Those are my thoughts. Joe, what would you add?
I mean, I think training workshops specifically for like elderships would be huge. Like small time, not 1,000 people there, but like you get 20 guys there and help them grow up to be elders. You know, train them in whatever it looks like. Get some very well knowledgeable elders in the area or some preachers that are well respected and help train them up into that. I think that would be one of the biggest needs of the church is strong elderships that are willing to actually stand up and say the things they need to and are actually willing to sit across the table from their members and willing to help the parents who are really struggling with their kids and willing to get into the nitty-gritty doctrinal discussions and to say, these are the doctrinal things that we adhere to here. You know, we use that autonomy and we call they call the members to the highest degree of holiness that they can, right? Rather than waiting for the lectureship to do it, rather than going to the right lectureship with the right speakers, with the right doctrinal click. No, this is what we do here, right? The elder sets the culture. And I think we would do so much better if that was kind of the goal, is take elders, like elder workshops, basically, and help them grow up into being the men of God that they need to be, you know, helping individually the people at the congregation, rather than smattering of people that heard a great lesson on, you know, at that lectureship, whatever it is. That's fantastic, but how much more would it matter if 52 weeks of the year you were in 52 different homes helping somebody else? I mean, I think that's the future. That's what's going to have to be, the hyper-localism and getting back to the individual matters. And the individual gets lost at some of these 7,000 people conferences. It's great. Glad they go there. They get their batteries recharged. But man, I think the local church is the solution to these things.
And that's the question, is like, you know, somebody will say, well, why can't we do both? I think at some level we can, but sure. The more and more we're adding to the schedule, it's just not going to happen. Like that, there's a point at which we've got to go, okay, we've got enough of those. We really need to return the work locally. And the thing is, these are all fulfilling a really big need people have. As Will brought up earlier, Joe, you and I are married because of conferences like this, and even to a lesser extent, you know, Will is in a little bit of a different way, but. You know, there's a lot of people with those stories. And so, you know, even in with the homeschool circles, that's another niche of this and things like that. There's a need that's there to be met. And I'm not even against getting people together. I think kind of reframing it, like really being fellowship forward, because there's a degree to which you go and you're in the lectures all day long from like 8 a.m. till 8 o'clock at night. You can do more of the fellowship. Like, what if you just made it a fellowship kind of thing, and there's a worship at night, or, you know, things like that. And I mean, Legacy Family Camp, where I met my wife, was a little more like that. There's, you know, a little bit more time to go do and have things, you know, to do. But, you know, really thinking like that's the thing that everyone says about all of these is like the number one thing. And I think there's a place for like the more academic lectureship kind of things. But, I don't know. There's something here where you don't want to just be like, this all stinks and try and talk everyone into, you know, canceling everything. And now there's a huge gap there. There's like a huge, hole in a need that was being met for people with fellowship, with finding like-minded people, with, you know, not feeling so isolated, things like that. I agree with you. The best way to handle that is in the local church. And I think the best way for the local church to create this is to get more specific with your teaching. Like to get to be distinctive in what you're teaching, promoting a certain kind of doctrine, and not just we don't use instruments and we don't have women preachers, but some of the things we talk about here of a view of the husband and a view of the wife and a view of children and a view of the home and things like that. Like there's a beacon for that. And in the same sense that like during COVID, the churches that were very strong stance, you know, took very strong stances grew like crazy. Because it was putting out a beacon to a certain kind of people. I think the kind of thing we've avoided doing in the local church is one of the best ways to get back to getting this kind of fellowship in the local church. So, yes, the local church. Yes, I think there's always going to be events. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. But rethinking what we're trying to get out of them, I really think is maybe the key question there. I don't know. We're kind of drawn to the end there. That's all of my summarizing thoughts, but I know you guys still have some stuff to say. So what do you guys have to kind of wrap your thoughts on this?
I think what I would say is I do see value in these overall. Like, you know, I think there's certainly value to them. I do think there are too many of them is kind of where I'll kind of plant my flag. And that sounds terrible, but what we, again, I'll just go back to the point that I started with, which is the local church is not doing very well. And you, of course, can't blame conference culture for that, but I don't think it's helping. And so I would say, again, like, will I attend one of these in the future? I'm sure I will. Like, I think there's a lot of good that comes with it. I think there's a lot of value. I think the spiritual, the equipping, as long as you're wary of some of the things we brought up, I think they're valuable. The problem is, most of the time, it's done at the expense of the local church, and that's what I think needs to change. And unfortunately, while there's this many of them, again, to go back to the analogy, while the market's oversaturated, you're just not going to see that emphasis on the local church. And so that's what I think needs to change more than anything. And if that means a few of them getting chopped off the calendar, like, I think that's necessary. Again, and I don't condemn anybody for going. I think, once again, there's value. I'm not trying to ride the fence here, but I think, once again, we've got to get our emphasis back on, what are you doing for your local church? Who are you mentoring? Who are you being mentored by? What are you doing to disciple your kids? What are you doing to, again, invest in your congregation? If you're not doing those things, but you're attending, you know, Connect Conference or Lads to Leaders or PTP or whatever it is, you might need to reevaluate some things. And that's all we're trying to say, I think, with this episode. I guess that's all I'm trying to say with this episode. Joe, what would you wrap this up with?
I think that's a great wrap. If it can be used appropriately, as long as it is pushing you back to being on fire for your local church and not being a consumer at your local church, but really being a doer, you know, somebody that gets that done. And so I think that's the only thing I'd say is I'm with you guys. I'm not against them. I don't think they're the end of the world. I don't know how they're not a net negative, but they certainly can be if through the glorification, over glorification of some of these things and celebrity culture and just some things to watch out for. But I also, if we use them appropriately, hopefully this does grow the church and has an opportunity to really be a beacon for people to go back, be on fire for everything in their local work and to make that work all the more. So yeah, that'd be the only thing. With that, let's jump into the Think Fast for this week. And there's a few different things going around, but I think we'd be remiss if we did not cover one of the biggest internet events, I think, of the year.
And I have a theory
that I'll get to here in a bit. Okay. But Coldplay has a concert, and wouldn't you know it, the guy on the Jumbotron or the major screen has his arms around somebody that he's not supposed to. And he ducks and she turns around in shame and embarrassment. And Chris Martin, the lead singer, basically said, like, well, either they're really shy or they're having an affair. Like, he just calls everybody.
Yeah.
And indeed, this was a CEO of Astronomer, which is an AI company. I think it's worth millions. Startup company, but either way, worth millions. Guy is worth a significant amount of money, and yes, he was caught cheating on his wife, and the wife is now divorcing him. It is a huge story, and people are absolutely fascinated by it. And so, yeah, I think the key question that I kind of wanted to get into is why you think it captures the imagination. Like I said, I have some thoughts. Will, it sounds like you have some thoughts. So, Jack, I'll start with you because you're the one that...
No, I want to hear you guys' thoughts, since you have them, on why it was so popular, because I'm a little bit baffled here.
Okay, Will, what are your thoughts?
So I'll give why it's popular and kind of maybe a take or two that I have. I honestly think one of the reasons it was so popular, when I say popular, like why it spread so much and went so viral, is because of how genuine the reaction was. Like, there was no faking that. Like, it was almost like it's like watching a car wreck happen. Like, everybody's captivated by it, you know? And so I think that's what a lot of it
real.
It's very real. Like, yeah. You know, stuff that people see in movies and shows, like, that's Hollywood. No, this was real life. Like, you can see the instant they realize they're on the Jumbotron and just how quickly they break away. And it's just kind of a fascinating insight into the fact that people don't just do this in the movies. They don't just do this on TV shows. No, people do this in real life. And we got, once again, one of the most raw, like, sincere examples of it played out right before our eyes. So that would be my answer as to why it went so viral and why it kind of dominated the internet and still kind of is over the last several days. The only kind of takes I have on it that are, you know, again, there's been people that it's all the internet's been talking about. So none of these takes are going to be original to me. I guess the big one that I have is why so many people are focusing on the man, and not the woman. you saw a ton of people come out and just, and to be fair, there were some that bashed both of them, but the guy's the one that's getting all the attention from what I've seen. And you can easily tell from the woman's reaction as well. She knew what she was doing. It's not like she was like, oh, you were married? I didn't know. Like, you could clearly tell. I couldn't tell in the reports that I think she was married. I know some people were saying that she was divorced, but it did seem like everything was heavily weighed once again, as usual, towards the guy for it, when obviously I think both of them need to share an equal part in the blame there. And I guess the other thing that I'll bring up is, isn't it amazing how as soon as light gets shown on the darkness, what happens? Like, they went from the euphoric feeling of, you know, being together, and, you know, I think TMZ released a video as well. Like, you see what happened before they went on the Jumbotron. Again, they're just perfectly happy in sin, perfectly, again, having these euphoric feelings. And probably we're going to continue in this for months and months until somebody's shown a light on it. And I just think that's perfectly emblematic of the way sin is when it's exposed, is when you get to see the true ugliness of it. But as long as people can stay in darkness, man, they'll love it as much as they can, and they'll enjoy every minute of it. So, yeah, again, none of that's original to me. I'm sure other people have said that, but those were kind of the thoughts that I had. Joe, so what about you?
My theory on this is it touches on so many different aspects, tendrils of life. Everybody is almost forced to have a take one way or the other. Sexually, obviously, the power dynamics between a boss and an HR rep, like, you know, is he using his power, right? Kind of brings back the Me Too. The business dynamic of watching his business navigate through, what does this look like? The new CEO saying, wow, we have more publicity than ever. Nobody knew who we were, but kind of not the way you want to find it. And so that's an interesting take. Obviously, the morality take. There are people in the world that have no standard, and all of a sudden they found a standard. Like, well, where's your standard in this? You know, is this a shifting standard for them? Obviously, for Christians, it's a pretty easy standard, but morality, privacy, should they have been on there? It sounds like he's going to try to sue Coldplay for putting him on there now. And,
that's about the least self-aware move.
There's no way
if he does.
Correct. I mean, I think you're signing, like, when you buy tickets, you kind of sign like, yeah, you potentially could be on the Jumbotron. I don't think he has any leg to stand on.
Privacy. You're at a concert with 60,000 people. Give me a break.
Right. Exactly. But, you know, the privacy of, should all of his dirty laundry have been aired? Now we know his wife. We know everything about him. We know their divorce settlements. We know how much money. Like, should we know all of that? And so it kind of ropes people in. Women in the workplace. I saw some things on that. How much of a dynamic shift that is, having women in the workplace. And this would have never happened without it. And then, of course, monetarily, people are tracking the money side of things. They're tracking the worth and value of his company fluctuating. I mean, I just think it touches on so many different
things. So to be clear, which one of those is the reason why you think it's so popular? I'm just kidding.
No, I'm saying, yeah. It's,
you think all of
everybody
it.
Yeah, is yeah. forced to, you're engaging on some, it's not just a cut and dried. It's like, there are, it is morality wise, but there are so many things to this that are like, how did that happen? Why did it happen? What's going on?
Fascinating.
Yeah. It's a fascinating thing that touches on so many different parts of life, aspects of life. Somebody, like, basically everybody is forced to have some take one way or the other, is what it feels like to me. You're forced into taking a side one way or the other. And everybody likes being against him, of course. But as you said, where's everybody against the woman? That is the fascinating thing to me, is how much she gets let off the hook when it's like, wow, this guy's a dirtbag. Like, and she didn't know that he was married. This, it takes two to tango, and both of them are in the wrong, but she's pretty much absolved. And that's also a very interesting angle in all this. But Jack, what are your thoughts as you listen to us?
Yeah, I think it's so big because people really, really, really like judging, and there's very few opportunities to do it without feeling like a bad person. I think that's why reality TV, you can go on and think, well, I'm better than these people. I mean, like, that's why they always show like the bottom of the barrel of society, is it gives people that like sense of superiority. And so, no matter what you've done, at least you weren't the guy who got caught, you know, with another woman on the Jumbotron. I wrote on it last week about, you know, this versus the Chip Gaines thing that Will and I had the episode on, you know, that, oh, you're not supposed to judge with the Chip Gaines thing, but nobody has a problem with judging here. Nobody's doing Love the Sinner, Hate the Sin with the Coldplay, you know, fan CEO guy and his alleged mistress. And so, you know, people like judging, and here's an opportunity for them to do so. And it's like, man, your standards are garbage. Your morality is garbage. It's so frustrating to see, but I mean, they're absolutely right in this case, and that it's bad. And it's nice that people can agree on objective morality for once. this is awful. You just feel awful for the wife and the husband that weren't there. I think Matt Walsh had a great take on it of, we need to punish this very seriously. Like we used to as a society, this used to be a very big crime. And now it's like laughable that it would be a crime. Why? Like you are violating the most important contract you will ever sign. If you violate any other big contract, you're in big trouble. And so, to kind of, not make too much light of this thing, like that's don't do that. Just everyone knows that, but don't do that. And we should take this far more seriously than we as a society do.
I think his life is going to be, it's not over, but I think it's going to be very, very difficult. He's a disgraced CEO. Nobody's going to want to hire him. That's really where sin gets you, is it always seems good on the front end. There will always be consequences. At some point, it will catch up to you. And I think that's a key takeaway, that this is one of those you talk to your kids about. Guys, this is very serious. These are the consequences of sin. No, maybe it doesn't always come out, but these are the consequences that sin brings in your life if you're not careful. Yeah. So.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap right there. If you're watching this on the Think Fast Only, the episode comes out next Monday on church conferences, lectureships, the benefits, the things that maybe we think are worth rethinking. And so you might enjoy that one. Keep an eye out for it. Be sure you're subscribed either here on YouTube. Be sure to click like and subscribe to our channel or on the podcast feeds, wherever you get your podcast. Just search for Think Deeper. So we'll talk to you guys on that one. We'll see you Monday.